This episode of The Speakeasy is brought to you by Diageo. Check out their fine portfolio of spirits.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sound. It's gonna get you started.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
Souther, how you doing, bud?
I'm very well. How are you?
Dude, I'm really psyched about your book.
Thank you.
How's it been going?
Man, it's great. Sales are up and people are enjoying, and I couldn't be more proud of the work that we did as a thank you. As a team, my editor, Jeff Ashworth, really put in a lot of muscle. Eric Metzger, who's been on the show before, was our photographer. It's amazing. Like, it's exceeded all of my expectations for sure.
Are you... You psyched to be traveling around doing all the book tour stuff?
Man, it's great. It's a pleasure. Like, people are so welcoming. Like, I don't know. It's a little bit embarrassing.
So you already have plans for the next one?
Yeah, they've already asked me to write another book. We're working out an outline, and we'll see which way it goes.
Cool, man.
I don't know. It was a lot of work. Yeah. I don't know that I'm ready to do it again. But you forget the pain, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Like, I kind of had forgotten how hard it was to write this one in the interim between having finished it and having it arrive. So I don't know exactly how I feel. Whatever. I'll probably do it.
Yeah.
You know me.
I'm sure you will.
I don't say no to projects.
When you get your next iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. If I get an iPhone 10, iPhone people out there, that'd be great.
Maybe if I get one, I'll also write a book on it.
How are things with you?
Great.
It's a beautiful day in Brooklyn.
Sure is. And yeah, man. Things are great. Moving right along. Working on some new projects.
Uh-huh, West Coast.
West Coast, man. Been out there for a little bit.
Is it true? Is the West Coast the best coast?
I don't want to get
East Coast the Beast Coast? Uh-oh. I don't know what that is. Breaking news.
Breaking news. The West Coast the best coast.
Just trying to maintain, you know, trying to not feel any pain. And the way I like to do that all the time is... It's actually kind of cool because we have a really great person in the studio today. I really like to drink tequila to not feel any pain. So
sure.
We should introduce our guest.
Yeah. Well, we've got Enrique de Colza, the master distiller from Tequila Don Julio, one of the luxury brands from Diageo in the studio. Welcome, Enrique.
Welcome. Thank you.
Good to have you.
Nice to be here.
Yeah.
I'm glad to be here with you.
Cool.
Easy travels getting here?
Easy, but a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Easy to come, but from many other places, and the travel will continue to 3-4 more cities. But yes.
You're like a rock star. You tour around and give shows.
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes stay for 2-3 months there in the distillery. But when sometimes that tour starts, yes, maybe can be 1.5 month traveling.
How does that feel for someone like you? Do you think you ever thought... You know, I'm going to be a distiller of a thing that I love to make, and then that's going to propel me into, like, the spotlight of stage. I don't think we're, like, rock stars, but, like, there's something to be said. Other people do their jobs every day, and they do it really well, and they don't get asked to travel around and talk about it.
Not exactly. But it's a matter of what the life put to do it, because, of course, I can tell you, if I think it many, many years ago or when I was a kid to say I'm going to be this, or really when I start starting in the engineering world, thinking about liquids and that things that I've been in my first years after the college, I start to work with liquids of any kind. I work with oils and perfumes, and that was my beginnings. Definitely, I never dream or thought
right
what I'm doing here, and with the brand that I'm doing, no, because also it's quite a different to run a distillery or be in charge of some distillery company, and the other is to run a brand like this. No,
right.
This is a
prestige.
It's another level of prestige and a lot of pressure, a lot of a weight on your shoulders, because you are carrying not only a great quality of product, but also a tradition, a heritage, something that, at least for the Mexicans, has been, 500 years making tequila. And Don Julio, the number one tequila in Mexico by far in the premium, ultra-premium market. And then also it's so that extra job. No?
There's heritage and tradition and, like, continuity. You have to be the same all the time, right? Exactly. You have to make, they expect the product when they open the bottle, and it has to be there every single time.
Exactly. That is the main thing. And the other thing is when you release something, you need to continue also that tradition of quality and to create something that do not copy to others. No, it's not to make another tequila. It's to make the a different. Tequila, it's tequila right. that must to be tequila, but with something different. No?
That must be amazing. It's the number one
sold tequila in Mexico. Yes, in the premium ultra premium market, no we idea. Are the number one.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. Number one in home turf. Yeah, if you're number one in your home turf,
yeah, then you're killing it.
Yeah, you're doing a pretty good job there, buddy.
So that's your kind of position and role, master distiller. How did you get started with Don Julio?
Well, I actually am the master distiller. I'm the director of operation director. I run the distillery and I run the quality and all the production doing there in the distillery. And I reached Don Julio, as I told you before, I worked for many times related with liquids, many kind of liquids. And I was designing plants for milk and juices and other things.
Oh, wow.
In my beginnings.
As an engineer, though, right?
Yes. I'm an industrial engineer with not a master, but a specialization in chemical. But I'm basically an industrial engineer. And I met Don Julio being my customer in 1988, 89. I worked with them, with his team and with himself to design a bottling line and the bottles for produce Don Julio tequila. The tequila was launched in 1987. And then in 1988, 89, I met them designing because the bottle was, in that time, was quite different from any tequila bottle. In the past, all the tequila bottle was similar, not cylindrical and tall and rounded and was easy to bottle. But to bottle in an automatic line, in a square one, a short one, hand blown, that breaks a lot because it's so fragile. Then I work with them, develop, change it part of the bottle by itself and designing how to bottle in a machine. And then I met him in those times. And then later, a friend of mine of another brand invited me to go to run his distillery. Wasn't Don Julio in that time. And in 86, I moved out from Mexico City. Really, my challenge or my dream in that time, I knew how to build distilleries and plants and bottling plants. And one of my friends, as my customer also, knew that I wanted to go out of Mexico City. I lived in Mexico City in those times. And I accepted to move to Guadalajara to run this other distillery. In
an engineering capacity, or were you going to
No, as an operation sure. director also, in charge of the distilling. And then I moved.
It's a lot more fun than milk.
No, by far. By far, no, but I told you, I make milks and juices and perfumes. Perfumes is quite similar, by the way. And a lot of the spirits also. I work on designs on bottling lines and pumps and heat interchangers and filters for another brands, even for spirits also. And when I moved with these guys in 1996, 1986, then I went into the tequila world with this other brand. And in some moment around 1988, Don Julio, that used to be my customer 10 years before, we met in a tequila chamber meeting. And then he told me, "Hi, Enrique, what are you doing here? Because this is for tequila producers. And you sell bottles and lines." And say, "No,
that's part of the process.
I'm tequila producer since 2 years ago. Well, we have not been in touch, blah, blah, blah." And then he explained me that he was starting to deal to sell the company to Seagram in that time, the first buyer, the external that bought the factory from the family was Seagram. And then they finally sold in 1999. And then this was 1998. And then he told me, we went to dinner and say, "Okay, we're the family. And then these people are some corporative things. We need a kind of guy who knew the two worlds."
Sure,
and keep us how to link it to traspass that. And that's why in 1999, I moved with them. And then I left the other company and I joined Tequila Don Julio in 1999. And I worked with him for that time up to 2004 when he retired. And when he retired, nobody from his family wants to be in the technical part. I moved in with him as a operation director also. First as a production manager, and then I went to a operation director. And when he decided to retire, I was the technical guy who was in charge and say, well, you are there.
You're the obvious choice, right?
Exactly. And then I stayed there since that time.
So you've been with Don Julio for almost 20 years.
Almost 20 years. This year it will be 19 years.
Amazing. And you love it. I can tell by the way you talk about it, you love it.
Now it's in my heart, in my head.
So before it was
my blood,
milk, a juice, and perfume, finally tequila, and then finally the tequila.
To be in the blood is very easy. All the days I make an effort to let it there.
Yeah, exactly. So do I. So you've been hanging out with him for 19 years. Let's talk about what it is you make over there. You have six different labels, right?
Actually, are eight.
Eight?
Eight. We have six here, but there's...
You keep the secret stuff back home.
But totally,
that's why you're
totally
the number
now
one
we have
in
eight
Mexico.
In Mexico, yeah. Well, we have only one that is not here. This is going to be our seventh.
This one that's on the table, we haven't mentioned the double cask,
exactly. But that one is the seventh. But we have a very, very new one, only Mexico, that was 2 months ago released. Maybe, I don't know, in the future here in the States, but totally we have eight.
You want to run us through all of them?
Well, yes, we have our, we can say as all the tequilas, the basic one is the Blanco. You must to produce Blanco to produce the rest.
That's what comes out of the still.
Exactly. We know the reasons, but the first Don Julio that exists was not the Blanco. Physically, of course, was the Blanco, but in terms of selling, the first one was Reposado. Okay, first they sold Reposado for a long, long history about that how was released the product into a party, and the one that they liked in that moment, the guest of that party was Reposado, and the first was that somebody asked for to sell it was Reposado. That was our first one. For in terms of time, was Reposado. But then we have Blanco, we have Reposado. The Reposado is aged in American white oak barrels, and we for one turn of bourbon. We don't use new wood. We use one turn bourbon, and we let it there for 8 months. And then we have another Reposado, that is the new one that is in Mexico. That maybe we will talk later. But we have a Reposado clear. We call is a kind of 70, but now in Reposado, Don Julio 70. Then we have three añejos, that is the regular, the one that well-known Don Julio Añejo, that is 18 months in the same barrels. Then we have Don Julio 70, that is the first Añejo Cristalino, the first Añejo Clear, that is the same 18 months, but with a process that I use to filter with charcoal, not through charcoal, that is quite different. And that means that we put charcoal inside and let it rest for some certain amount of time. And then we filter through cellulose. And then what we do is remove some flavors and aromas. The results give us also a clear product because the charcoal removes the color also. Mm-hmm. But I didn't work to remove the color. Really, what we removed was flavors and aromas in order to enhance the Blanco and the herbal sensations of the Blanco. We needed to return it, or we wanted to return it to an Añejo. Okay, the Añejos are sweet, as smooth, as great. That part is beautiful, but people also like that powerful, that alcohol sensation, that strong, that heating.
Grassy and herbal.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So it's like a Benjamin Button situation, where
it aged backwards.
And then it went aged backwards.
Exactly. because in certain way, yes, it's returning something from the basics, but without losing the smoothness and the sweet of the añejos. That's what we did.
What prompted this innovation? What made you say to yourself, I'm going to do this thing where I kind of reverse engineer it, other than your degree as an engineer?
Do we have 2 hours to tell you about
it? Yeah, let's talk.
let me finish what it is.
Sure, there, of course.
And go back. I know, okay. Probably only to finish that. Then we have the añejo, of course. Then Don Julio 70. We're going to take it a little bit more. Then we have another añejo that is really, really hot here. That is the 1942.
Yep.
That añejo, instead of the 18, we
people are clamoring.
Only you have heard a little bit about that.
People are clamoring for this.
Yes.
Stuff.
And that is 30 months, is 2.5 years aging. Also is the same barrels, and can take a little bit more than in the barrels. And then we have Don Julio Real, that is 40 months age, is an extra añejo, okay, and is the longer in time. The new one that we are going to present now is the other reposado. That is the Reposado Dos Barricas, but I believe that we are going to talk later. That is the double cask. Okay?
We can talk about it now. I see it in Damon's hand.
You can't pry it out of my hand.
Well, I'm going to talk with him about that because he has it.
Well, okay, before we get into that, which we're going to pour and drink, let's do rewind and talk about what
I want to talk about the Reposado being the first product because, like,
there's that too. Yeah.
What year would that have been? Would that have been like the late
1987?
1987.
Yeah.
Okay, that kind of makes a lot of sense to me because the late 80s and then through the 90s, especially when there was a big drought in Mexico. So a lot of remember this? There was like a huge drought. So like a lot of like tequila like became a little bit harder to get because there just wasn't enough around.
Was for that. Mainly, and the Julio is one of the bases to do that.
Yeah.
For two reasons. One, because start to be with a quality in terms of Mexico has having tequila for 500 years.
Right.
Okay. In those times, up to the last 40 years, the tequila used to be a very, very bad product. Really was a cheap product, was a low-cost product. Of course, the Mexicans drink it, the Americans drink it, you know, but what's that idea of the spring breaks, you know, and the terrible parties and
awful hangovers.
And take out your brain out, you know, and that kind of things that was part of what Don Julio did with the image. He was a very clever guy when he started, well, was clever all his life, but in terms of when he started to make tequila, he was in a business 80 years ago, 1942, okay, that the tequila was not a good reputation and, of course, no good quality. But this guy started to think it, this is my business. He needed to compete in price and quality and everything in that business that, again, was not a high-level business, was a volume, was a kind of that. But he said, but I'm not going to give to my family and friends what I sell, what I do, because I compete with that market. And then he started to make something for himself. He said, I'm going to make the best tequila in the world. He was his target.
He's a visionary. He saw a vision and he thought to himself, I can't sell this broad yet, but this is where it's going.
He said, not thinking to sell it. Hey, the selling and production will be here, but for my family and friends are going to be here. Even he said, I'm going to make the best tequila in the world, even if I don't sell it. Because he knew that there was not market, there was not the cost were so high. And then he never thought. And that's what came talking about why, because the first was the Reposado. It's because he for years, even he didn't know if it was for 3, 5, 20, or 30 years. He made difference in the process for slowly cooking, own yeast, agave harvest in a different way. When he liked some production, 50 liters, 100 liters, 200 liters, he put in a barrels that he had in his own office. Not for the production, in his office, 50 liters there. Then. And then he never knew what to do. Only he said, he tasted and said, oh, wow, this production, like it, give me 100 liters and put it there. Okay? And with the time, there was some tequila there, without name, without future, only for friends and family. And
But at a certain point, you got more barrels than friends and family.
By far.
Right. So it's an insurmountable amount of tequila sitting here.
Yes. And for a certain time, he, you know, some friend came with him and say, Julio, give me a little bit of your tequila. No? And then he opened a barrel and give a bottle or a glass or whatever. And then in 1985, he suffered a brain stroke. that's what became why was the first thing. And they made the family, when he returned after 1 year that he was sick, he returned and had a big depression because he looking that he was slowly to think and he lost part of his memory for that stroke. And then he suffered a big depression, and his family, to cheer him up, made a party. And in that party, they served the tequila that he was keeping for friends and family.
Everybody loved it.
Everybody loved it. One of the guests was a distributor, a Mexican spirit distributor, and then called him some days after that and say, wow, great launch, beautiful product, I want to buy it, I want to make the first order. And then Julio say, bad news, I don't have product. It's the one that I gave in the party, that's the only thing that we have. But okay, you are a good friend and I have 7 boxes left, take it, are for you. And then this guy said, no, I need 1,000 cases. And then they start to talk for several weeks and say, and Don Julio think how to do it and say, no, I don't want to do it because I don't know how to make it. I made different changes, but I never make it one tequila tasted that. But the good thing is that they had at the end 7 boxes that they knew the profile.
So they get reverse.
They know what it is. And then it's exactly. He knew that, okay, I make the best thing that I did with agave was this and this and this. I love the production of the 3 months ago when I cook slowly. And he said, well, I will try to do it and offer to this guy to have the 1,000 cases, but in 1 year. And then this guy said, okay, I'm going to wait 1 year. And the price, put the price that you wanted. In that time, the most expensive tequila was $4.50 into retail. And Julio said to this guy, well, for you that you are going to be a distributor, my tequila is going to cost $10.
So more than double.
Mm-hmm. Only, but for distributor. The other retail was $4.50.
Oh, retail and was $4.50. Holy shit.
That means that after distribution needs to cost $18, $20. 5 times more than the most expensive. And this guy said, tomorrow you will receive 2 checks, one for 7 boxes, the other for 1,000 cases. You can cash flow tomorrow, and I'm going to wait 1 year. And that's why it became Don Julio in the market.
So basically that's almost like investing in the company, getting the money so they can hold for a year.
I can wait. I can pay in advance for 1 year. I'm going to wait 1 year, but I want to have your product.
So this guy was just a complete believer in the product.
Exactly. And Don Julio, a visionary that said, I'm going to make the best tequila in the world, even if I don't sell it. Well, this guy, in some moment, put it in the hands.
Listen, you make the best thing, somebody wants to buy it.
And well, that is the Don Julio that we are drinking already. You know? That idea, that visionary. And that what you mentioned, that what in the middle of the 80s start to change everything.
Yeah.
Because there came the good tequilas, there came the reposados tequila that was smoother. The women start to drink tequila in Mexico because in the past was, you know, for the Mexican macho and then, you know, and you want to scream and go with the mariachis. And that's the idea that in the time start to change it. And, well, in the 90s when I moved on with the distillery and other brands, you start to go to Mexico and the bottles were over the tables. And that before, nobody drink with a showing to other people. You were with 2 or 3 of your friends and drink a bottle of tequila, but never show that you were drinking tequila. No?
Right,
but
you were proud of it. You
and then since that time, from the middle of the 80s, 86, 87, that was Don Julio appears, and then start to be a very proud thing, and that's what we have already.
And then it was like, then we get to, like, feels like the late, mid-late 90s, then it was it like Reposado was really big.
Exactly.
And then, because it become, it, you know, a lot of times with like whiskeys, you know, you think like the longer it's aged, the better it is, right?
Yeah.
So that's the way I always thought about it with tequila. And then, of course, you get añejos. And then, like in the early 2000s, all of a sudden you start finding like super añejos, extra añejos. But what's cool, I have the Don Julio Blanco on the back bar at my bar, and it's one of the biggest selling ones that I have, biggest selling tequila that I have there. Because it's interesting that after all this time of people starting to taste the stuff with more and more age on it, and the newer generations getting into, you know, tequilas and whiskeys and even gins to a certain extent, they want to see what the original product, where like the like where it comes from, like the source of it, you know?
Exactly.
So like you start to see a lot more of the Blanco tequila and like even just like Blanco tea and mezcal, you know, just like the true like original product off the still. People are very
we've educated our consumer,
of course, yeah. Exactly. So I think it's a really cool time for tequila, especially for things that come double barreled.
I think we're living in a cool time for spirits in general.
Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, as well as take a station break and talk about donating to Heritage Radio Network. We'll come right back and we'll be doing some screaming with some mariachis while we drink some Don Julio. Thanks, guys.
Listening to the speakeasy. Souther's cracking a beer.
Hey, it's the second half of the show. Second beer, second half. I'm also going to open up this tequila.
Do it.
So we're back in the studio with Enrique de Colza from Tequila Don Julio. And we're about to taste some of your... This is brand new, right? Double cask.
Brand new. Here in the States.
Am I the first one to taste it in the States?
Last week, yes.
Am I the first?
Yeah.
No, I'm not. This bottle's half empty. You drank some on the way.
Was on the way, was on the plane. But here now you have it.
All right, I'm pouring little nips for everybody, but Damon, you can keep chatting.
Yeah, so,
yes, there's lots of folks in the studio today.
Yeah,
pouring seven glasses.
I know, because it's Don Julio, you know, everybody wants to drink it.
Everybody started to gather around.
That's the difference. They say Don Julio is here.
So when we left...
Even if we said our angel share, you know, in our warehouses, we said... Always when visiting the distillery, say, look how many angels are here. Are more angels than any other distillery because they are drinking Don Julio.
Look how many angels are here.
We are the best angel share that we can have it because there are thousands of angels over at the company.
That's amazing. I mean, that's actually something we could talk seriously about, right? Like where your Rick House is, where you're aging, the it's a lot hotter than, say, the Southeast United States. So your percentage of angel share has got to be higher.
Yes, higher by far. We have in our barrels, in our warehouse barrels, a humidity control. We don't have a temperature control. We have a humidity, and we maintain 85 to 87% humidity. And we reduce, and with that reducing and that control, we have almost 6.57% per year lost.
Jeez.
Yes. You know, Mexico, we're 25, 28%.
Right.
And 25, 28 Celsius degrees of temperature as an average. Okay. We're still reaching sometimes 40 degrees. Yeah. And that's what we lost a lot, no? Comparing. That's what you never will find any tequila that has more than 7 or 8 or 9 years because... It's really hard.
It makes no financial sense in Mexico.
Exactly. You need to have a very temperature control that costs a lot. A fridge, a refrigerator, and warehouses. And
I talk to guests all the time about how I think distillers look at the planet like a baker looks at the oven. Mm-hmm. There's a hot spot, which is certainly going to be like down in your area in Mexico. Yeah. There's the sort of sweet spot that's kind of the Southeast United States. And then there's that cold spot, which is like in Scotland. And you can get a range of the same sort of textures and flavor notes with different years, right? So it's like 2.5 to 3 years in Mexico is maybe 7 to 9 years in the Southeast United States is then 13 to 15 years in Scotland, right?
Exactly.
That slower cooker up there in Scotland
means
that you're not feeling the pinch of that angel share because it's not boiling it off. I mean, it's so hot. Mm-hmm. Alcohol is so volatile, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
See, I know stuff.
Yeah. Is that in your book?
Even in Scotland.
It's not in the book, but it'll be in book two. Stand by. Stand by for I'm just here for more drinks.
Speaking of Scotland, I just want to
speak of Scotland. Sorry.
You're a big golfer, aren't you?
I used to be. I love. Yeah. Of course, I'm a golf lover. I have played since I was a kid. I really reached to play, I believe, very good. But when I was in the young times, actually, I play once in a while, and I'm still, I don't know, 12, 13 handicap, but I reached to be four when I was from 17 to 25, 26.
I was just thinking about that. I play very good golf. I was just thinking about it earlier in the show when we were talking about traveling around and talking. I was like, I wonder how many golf courses he hits.
Right. Are you playing golf while you're here in New York?
No, by the way, never playing here in New York. Oh. Here in the state of New York, no. I played in the Hamptons with a friend. What is the closer one that I believe? But I play always in the South, in Florida or in California, and a lot in Colorado.
Nice.
Very cool.
You know, you got to have extracurriculars and extra things in your life or you're not a whole person.
Well,
I've been trying to find those things. I keep adding more of what I do to my lifestyle, which is work. And then I find that I'm less of a, you know, I don't have as many facets.
Well, it's also like when you sit down at a desk and you're trying to create, or like you, like when I sit down with a guitar and I'm trying to write a song, then I can't write a song. If I'm sitting at a desk trying to like work on an idea for something, I can't get it done. I always get inspired by the other things in my life to do, to write a song based on something else that was happening, or I come up with a cocktail idea when I was
based on my
like
little
fishing
ponies
or like whatever. Like whatever it is, you know, it's like there's always, you have all those different things in life, like they kind of like give you ideas, like making a double barreled tequila.
Yeah, so let's talk
about that.
Nicely done, Damon. Way to bring it back.
Learn from the best.
So double barrel. Talk to us about that, and then let's talk through this tasting. My mouth is watering. I'm just smelling this stuff.
Perfect. I'm still there. Wait for 1 minute more.
Yeah, I can. I'm like that Doberman pincher with the dog treat on his nose, just waiting for the go-ahead. Just give me the go-ahead.
The idea to use a second barrel or a double cask was, I don't know, maybe 12, 13 years ago, that I made a trip here in United States. I was invited by the government of Missouri and Kentucky and Ohio to visit different barrels producers, even go to the woods and go how the state producers and the barrels producers. And I bought in that trip, I bought, I don't know, 15, 20 barrels of different woods, different charred, different, even some ones that were not charred, that was only smokiness and like that kind of things.
Toasted, charred. I
bought someone that were made it for wine. And then I returned and start to make it and playing. That was making experiments, and someone's directly with those barrels, someone's changing barrels, et cetera, et cetera. And then someone's I start to like it. And when I like to change the barrels, and then I obtain another barrel from another things, I bought in Spain from some sherries and then whiskeys, and I make it. The things I had several tests. And then last year, 2017, was the 75th anniversary of Don Julio making tequila. Okay, he started to make it in 1942. We released 1942 tequila in 2002, celebrating 60th anniversary. We launched Don Julio 70 in 2012. And then very fast came 5 years. That was 2017. We cannot wait to the 80th anniversary. And then we decided to launch it there. And the people of marketing and sales asked me what do you have? And of course, I have examples in my files, no? In my fails also, because you make something good and 10 terrible, no? All the times is that, no? And there's
the best way to learn is to fail.
Exactly. That's what I have many good things in my files and a lot of in my fails. Okay.
What's the phrase? I never lose. I win or I learn.
Okay. That's what it is. And then into that files and fails, there were the use of second barrels. And well, in one of what I presented to the DIO people, I present something doing or using whiskey barrels without brand and without name. Okay, was only using barrels.
Right.
And then as Diageo is a large producer of whiskey, said, okay, that's good, and the taste, they like also other ones, but they prefer to say, okay, this whiskey, Diageo produced whiskeys, and we select to do it with Buchanan's, because at the beginning was thought only to launch it in Mexico as an special edition, and Buchanan's in Mexico is a great developed whiskey, has been grown in the last 5 years. Enormously, I cannot say that it's a well sell because Black Label sells more, but Buchanan's in terms of growth has been really unbelievable, very good. And then all the people, then we vote to say, okay, which other whiskey we can use, and everybody say, okay, try to do something with Buchanan's. And really, I'm a lover of Dalwhinnie. My beloved single malt for many years has been Dalwhinnie. Even I love the distillery by itself. And when I start to learn about Buchanan's and to do something with that brand, I wrote some mails to the people in Scotland that, and then they gave me, okay, the basics, the almost the 50% of the Buchanan's. In all the malts that are involved in the Buchanan's 12, in the original Buchanan's, is Dalwhinnie. And then I say, well, I love Dalwhinnie. And then send me some samples of the raw single malt without bottling. And then I receive it and I start to make tests with that. I love first combining the products. The first step is to put the products together. And then the barrels.
Mixology.
And then the barrels. No, yeah, that was the way. To put different percentage of Dalwhinnie into Don Julio, and then we put it in Blancos, and then to see what happened. And then when we say, okay, this is the range, or is the 5 or 6 formula that looks like that is going to be, then we bring three barrels from Dalwhinnie. We make a longer or larger examples. We decided for 5 formulas in that time, and then we took to Mexico 20 barrels more, and then we start really a long test, okay? And what we did, our regular reposado is 8 months, and the Mexican law said from 2 months to 12 months to be called reposado.
Right.
After 12 is an añejo. And then what I did with the 20 barrels was to play with tequila since 2 months and add, I want to express good, 2 months of Don Julio barrels, we said.
Sure.
And 1, 2, 3, 4, up to 10 months in Dalwhinnie. Then a Don Julio 4 months plus 1, 2, 3, up to 8. Because before 12, that was, no?
Right.
Yeah. And then we have, wow, Don Julio 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 months plus 1, 2, 3, 4. Then we have, I don't know, 150, 200
right.
tests. And then all the time tasting and that. And finally what I decided, of course, helping with the people, my staff of noses and everything, we found the in my mind profile and what we were talking before, it was is Don Julio, is not Buchanan's. And then must today is tequila. We need to express what is tequila is. And then we will let it there something from the Buchanan's. And we finally, we understand and we felt that 8 months in our actual barrels, the regular Don Julio barrels, plus 1 month in Dalwhinnie, gives what we can taste already. If you can take it to your nose now, it's a tequila. Okay,
absolutely.
Your entrance, the basic, if we can put a number, the 95% of all the aromas and flavors are tequila. From tequila.
Yeah, for totally. Sure.
Then you have the alcohol, you have citric, you have agave, of course. And in our fourth or fifth note that we have inside of our reposado, that is green apple, we have apples and pears at the end of our reposado. When you drink it, the original one, you will find those notes. It's a note that is also in the Dalwhinnie. And then when I link both, was with that note. In the green apple, we change. Instead of the finish of our reposado, it's a slightly spicy, cinnamon, a little vanilla, the finish.
It's
So it's like you took the Venn diagram of Buchanan's and Don Julio, and you found that spot where they cross over.
Exactly,
and say,
here is what it is.
Manipulated that.
That is the green apple. There's the pear. That is the sweetness. The sweet acid, because it's a sweet acid. It's not totally sweet part of sugar. And then finish. The finish is the one that is only a little peaty, a little smoky. At the nose, it's quite almost perceptible, but in your mouth, you will feel how the good finish of that whiskey sensation. And when you drink it, salud.
Salud.
Take a sip.
I couldn't wait anymore. Sorry. I jumped the gun.
Perfect. A lot of glasses here.
Yeah, there are a lot of glasses in here. Mmm.
And feel how tequila is. It's mainly tequila, all the beginning of your sensation in your mouth. But wait for the finish.
Oh, yeah.
And your aftertaste, 30 seconds, 40 seconds more. Now breathe through your mouth, and you taste whiskey.
Yeah. Wow.
My favorite flavors.
Your aftertaste is whiskey.
Right?
It's not tequila.
Softly cooked in the sun, apples.
Yeah.
And some baking spice, cinnamon.
Yeah.
But still, the beginning is more herbal and grassy.
Exactly. You know, it's funny though. It's
like herbs and grass and cinnamon.
Like like apple and pear and cinnamon. It's all like kind of like your normally you would think like that's like all like fall flavors, but it's still very like fresh at the same time.
Right.
So it I feel like I'm back in summer.
Yeah. It's delightful.
This is like, it transcends seasons.
And we're the first persons to ever have it.
Yeah,
he lied to us. This bottle was already open. He was sharing it with the flight crew.
And well, of course, it's after landing. It's a special edition. It's going to be a limited edition. We have launching 17,000 cases, and it's only one shot
limited.
Limited.
Yeah,
probably.
Everything's limited. You came out for the 75th birthday. But that whole process took you more than a year to figure out. Anniversary, sorry. Yeah. But that whole process took more than a year to figure out. So you were starting work on the 75th, year 73, right?
Yes.
Because you had to get it going.
Yes, but
it's not like you woke up. It's like you woke up and said, here it is.
But the examples of the, you know, the main test, believe me, to use a second barrel, I started, I don't know, 12 years ago.
Sure, you've been already working.
There. And then when I present, say, okay, this is with whiskey, this with rum, this with this, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's do it with whiskey.
It also has
then was only to put it Buchanan's. No, that was.
It also has like a late salinity. I just got like a little salt in my mouth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, am I crazy?
Tequila, no? Tequila, yeah. Tequila is salinity. Of course, the tequila, we have a salty sensation.
Sure.
At the tip of your tongue always has the tequila. Should
this is delicious.
Have, yeah.
This all is right. Delicious. Are you leaving this bottle with us? No. We're not that lucky.
Yeah, no, yes, of course. Hey,
can you pour some more for me?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, lifelong dreams achieved. Now you're making stuff that's just unique and incredible in the world. What's next?
Well, what's now the Reposado Claro in Mexico?
The Reposado what?
The Reposado Claro that I told you.
Oh, yeah, right, sure.
That is, in certain ways, the same process that I was trying to explain why was created the cristalinos or the clear ones, and was part to put together some thoughts that when you drink Blanco's tequila, Don Julio or whatever, any brand, really the Blancos, has that powerful, that alcohol, that citric that you already mentioned, and that is characteristic, you know, it's the herbal, there is that. But that rough sensation when you drink it, a Blanco, is in your palate, in your tongue, but also in your throat.
Yeah.
That was it.
That sort of burns.
That was burn. Exactly. No? And then
smooth.
That is came the, what is the macho style. No?
Right, right.
And that's why it started to be famous when it was Reposado, okay? Because you reduce that power, you have a smoother, easy to drink it, and the people, of course, like that. But with the time, we start to have more and more aged tequilas, up to the time that, in our case, in Don Julio, we reached 1942, that we know that the people love. Of course, it's a great, soft, easy, smooth, any description of nice, you have it in 1942, no? But in
1940, I just want to say 1942, that was like a phenomenon. Like when,
sure.
when that came out,
it went nuts.
People went crazy. I know we said that a little bit in the first half of the show, but like people still go crazy over 1942.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's like, you can see like different steps over like, I would say like the past 25 years and like 30 years of like the way tequila's grown. And it's like, I feel like every like 3 or 4 years, there's something that is like the new thing that just blows up, you know, and like it hits the scene and it's like that thing.
There are things that blow up, but they kind of maybe go away. There are also things that blow up and change the way we think of things.
Yeah, exactly.
Paradigm shifters.
And 1942 is definitely one of those.
Surely.
And it's, but it's still around, you know, like it's still being called for all the time.
Yeah. As far as the...
And it, you can use it as a baseball bat.
Yes, it's a bar-clearing bottle if you need it.
Yeah.
As far as the Cristalino goes, is anyone else doing that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. There are about, in Mexico, there's about 14 or 15 brands behind us also already.
That are doing it. Okay. Yeah. But you innovated it. You were the...
We are the
you,
first one.
You
the,
led the
first,
charge.
The first Añejo Cristalino, we were.
Yeah.
And the idea was for what came that, and I love to hear your words because something bring some memories even to me when you mentioned what about 1942 that we released in 2002. They were 6 years ago and still hot. At the beginning, of course, everybody that we are here except me, that I'm really old, I saw the tequila before the good times. Okay, but again, since in the 90s, when you start to drink it, and then later you...
It was still a good ladies, time. There was just a headache afterwards.
I don't know exactly. good times and good memories. I'm pretty sure that the memories are very good. The memory was more...
I'm pretty sure the memories are fuzzy.
But beloved to remember that what it is. But when it started to be very good, the problem... I tell you, even when we were want to release in 2002, we start to make it in 1999. And when I just arrived at... I was received to say, okay, we have in 2 years or 3 years. And when we found what to do with 1942, really we have a lovers and a haters. Because in that time, any tequila was so sweet and so nice and so smooth. And then a lot of people said, no, this is not going to work. It's so smooth, it doesn't taste of tequila. It's, you know, it's no. And even one of the reasons that the bottle is too tall is because... we have the doubt if 1942 should work or not. And then we wanted to separate of the original short bottles and say, if it doesn't work...
We can pull it and no one will notice.
Pull it out and no one will notice. Exactly. Exactly.
Brave enough to do it and innovate, but hedging your bets a little bit by changing the bottle so that if it had to go, you could just quietly sweep it aside. And
because Don Julio was the first one to use a short bottle. The first one. In that party that I mentioned before, the only request of Don Julio did was, okay, use my tequila, but find a short bottle, because I don't want that all the guests in the table was tilted around the bottle in order to see the other face, because the bottle were too tall in that time. And then he wants, find a short bottle. And the bottle is short because that. And now after 40 years, all the bottles are short, all the bottles are hand-blown, all the bottles have color. And why? Because Don Julio changed it, and Don Julio was a good product, and then everybody was imitated. Here is the same. We did the Cristalino, and now there are 15 brands behind us, no? Yeah. And when I tell the history why I made the Cristalino, that I have a history how I did it, then I said as a joke, but as a truth to the people that I gave to the testing, I say, well, after myself, when you ask to any other one, why do you make a Cristalino? Their only answer was, because we want to copy Don Julio, because that was the only thing. I have a whole reason how we made Cristalino. I was to bring it that, to bring it from the one that was sweet and rounded and smooth, bring it back, that power of the Blanco. Right. That was what I did.
I need to try this stuff. I haven't tried it. Because I'm a big Blanco. I like Blanco tequilas the most. So this sounds like it's going right up my alley.
Yeah.
But this juice here is delicious too.
I mean, I'm a whiskey guy, so I love this.
I take all comers. I don't discriminate on the backbone.
No. Yeah, I hear you. But I remember that vividly, like in 2002 when that agave leaf shaped bottle started popping up everywhere. I have an identical twin brother, and he actually got a bottle for like a gift from his boss at work.
Okay.
And he brought it home, and he was like, he'd already had like a quarter of the bottle like at his office, like that day at work. I think it was like during the holidays or something. And he was like, dude, you got to try this. And he's not in the bar industry, but he enjoys like good stuff, you know? And so that's how I was introduced to it. And I was like, all right.
And exactly. It was the four leaves put it together. That was the way that the shape born in that way. Put it four leaves together, and then it was tall and looks nice.
Yeah.
And we found a green, similar green of the agave azul, but in glass was impossible.
Yeah.
And that was so green. And that way we changed with the time because we needed to innovate and everything. We didn't change anything about the liquid, but the bottle was changed about 9 years ago.
Cool.
But yeah, the original one, as you mentioned, was with the leaves.
So when you're drinking Don Julio, any of the labels, how do you enjoy? How do you drink tequila?
I drink basically 80% of my time. Before this, I said 90. But now, with the appearance of Don Julio 70, 80% of my time I drink Añejo on the Rocks.
Añejo on the Rocks. That's your go-to.
And I take the other ones more. I love to mixing. I'm a cocktail lover. I have a very nice bar in my home. And I enjoy into mixing and make cocktails and that. And then I enjoy all ones. Playing golf, by the way, I drink a Blanco with tonic.
With tonic.
Blanco and tonic.
Yeah, I love tequila and tonic.
I do too.
It's actually become like a very...
with my formula, no.
I don't know. What's your formula?
You got a special tonic? What do you got?
Nope, it's not more. It's a special, the way to do it.
Okay,
you'll everybody feels the same. Okay, it's spirit and tonic and ice and... And a twist of lime, no? Here, myself, is the first that you put in an empty glass, no ice, no anything, put two twists of lime, green lime at the bottom, twist it in order to take it out the oils, let it there, and pour the tequila.
Yep.
1.5, 2 ounces there. Let it for 2 minutes without ice.
We're doing a short infusion.
It's a short infusion. That one, you need a twist to take it out the oils. Then the ice, and finish with the tonic.
Yep.
The garnish is inside already. And try it.
It's perfect. That's how I do gin and tonics. It. I'll do the same thing with like a grapefruit twist and a lime twist. Put that in there, the gin. Let that sit.
But without ice. The important is without ice, because you have the total strength of the product. If you put ice, you start to dilute the strength.
It's not as solvent anymore.
Exactly, I like that.
Exactly. You take it out, and then I love that.
Cheers to that.
Brilliant.
There's two Don Julio tonics Sundays playing golf.
That's great.
That sounds amazing. So it's mixology from Enrique de Colsa, from the master distiller from Tequila Don Julio, how to make a proper tequila tonic. Sounds delightful.
All right,
I'm going to try one later.
Same. I'm going to my bar in a couple hours, so.
I'm going there immediately. Such a pleasure having you in the studio. Oh, thank you so much for coming and being on the show and talking to us at length about your journey with being an engineer and coming through all of those different liquids and moving your way into tequila and then making yourself known as the head of Don Julio family. And you're doing them proud, that's for sure. These are amazing products, and we love them. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you both from.
Yeah, really
nice having you. I love it. Anytime, great time.
Whenever you're back in town, maybe next time you can come on the show and we'll actually make the tequila tonics.
We're gonna make them on the show next week without you. It doesn't matter. So I'm going to wrap up a little bit. I'm going to say some things we always say. You want more? Please follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at the Speakeasy Radio. At Speakeasy Radio. Damon is Damon Bolte. That's B-O-E-L-T-E. And you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write a review of us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform. Give us a star rating if you can, 5 if possible. And if you're visiting New York City or a resident, please stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. You might want to reach out to us beforehand to make sure we'll be here. Sometimes we don't do live shows, but we'd love to see you. So that's all I've got to say.
We're
typically here.
Sometimes we're not.
I'd say 9 out of 10.
At least one of us is here.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever.
I would hate for someone to show up on the one time when we're in Cleveland.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That does happen occasionally.
It does.
Well, that's it for the Speakeasy this week. Thank you again to our friends in the studio. And do go to heritageradionetwork.org. Click on the beating heart to donate to the station. That's how we keep going. And that's how we keep getting great guests to come in and bring us awesome tequilas that you can't try yet.
But soon.
All right. Thanks again for being on the show. Until next week. Salut.
Salut, guys.
Cheers. So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.